was killed by police.
Maria Cahill and April Sabby, thank you both so much for talking with me today.
Thank you, Sam.
Sure. Thank you, Sam. I appreciate the time.
Thank you so much for listening to KBOO Portland and to Totality of Circumstances. Thank you to Pacific Northwest Family Circle for appearing on the show tonight. And my name is Sam.
I'm Jasmine. I think we won't be here in 2 weeks because it'll be special election night coverage, but we'll see you in a month.
Yes, we will.
Hear you.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. Due to the temporary closure of in-station activity at KBOO, meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available on our website. The Development and Events Committee meets on the fourth Monday of the month at 4:30 p.m. Please visit our website at kboo.fm to verify if a meeting is being held.
Hi, this is Evelyn. Before we get started on tonight's show, I want to remind everyone that you can donate today at kboo.fm/give. We aren't at the station right now to take your calls, but you can show your support by giving online. Again, that's kboo.fm/give. You can also make a contribution to the station at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. All right. Good evening. You are listening to Transpositive here on KBOO Community Radio. My name is Emma, and I use she and her pronouns.
Good evening. This is Jean Bryant, your co-host, and I also use she and her pronouns.
And Lee, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah. Hi. My name is Lee, and my pronouns are he, him.
Great. Thank you. So, how's everybody doing?
Pretty good. Can't complain. The weather's been gorgeous today, I guess, on the day of recording.
Yeah, this is Thursday that we're recording this. And the sun came out. It was so nice.
Yeah. So if it's raining and miserable when you're hearing this, then just think it's nice. It's going to be nice again.
Remember what it was like on Thursday and be like,
exactly.
Ah. come out tomorrow. No, never mind.
So we are recording on Zoom because KBOO right now is closed because of COVID-19. It's only open for one show a day. And so everybody else is recording at home. And we're really honored today to have Lee with us. Lee is here to talk about his pandemic transition story. So, the idea for this came from, we were looking at show topics and we were kind of noticing people the last several shows have been talking about like when the pandemic started. People have mentioned stories about surgeries being delayed. People talk about being isolated. And we talk about some of the issues that people have to deal with when they're transgender, non-binary, and there's a pandemic going on. So we thought it would be interesting to talk to people, and we've had a couple of folks step up who would like to share their pandemic transition stories with us. So our first guest tonight is Lee, and Lee lives in Gresham and is here to share his story with us. So Lee, thank you so much for joining us.
Of course, thank you for having me.
So Lee, if you feel comfortable with it, can you tell us first of all just a little bit about yourself, like who you are, you know, if you
without not so much the full coming out story or anything, but I think to really set a framework, if you could talk about really like when you started transition, that'll help set the framework for the effects of what's been going on since February, March.
Yeah. So I live in the Gresham area, born and raised in this area and in Troutdale. I knit, I work for a coffee shop in the area. I play Magic the Gathering with my partner. Transition wise, I came out socially, I want to say November of 2018. 2018. And I started taking testosterone in November of 2019 because of healthcare issues of like, oh, I need to get my own insurance now. Cool. So I have been taking testosterone since November. We're getting close on my 1-year anniversary, which is crazy.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I haven't done a whole lot transition stuff in the sense of like scheduling surgeries or getting my name legally changed because those things are hard and scary. And I wanted to make sure I had a good name picked out. So I unfortunately don't have a whole lot of stuff that way. I am currently trying to raise money to afford top surgery. I'm very lucky that my work covers 100% of all transgender surgeries.
That is so great.
It's amazing, but I do also need to be able to pay rent while I am gone because they will not give me my full wages while I'm gone, which is fine. I get part of them, but it's still like, oh, rent is still due. So I'm more fundraising to be able to afford things like rent and groceries. And I'm very lucky and obviously privileged to be able to have those be my worries as opposed to I need $10,000 for surgery. I'm very lucky that I get to be in the, like the $1,500 range. Okay, that's fine.
Lee, do you mind if I ask what insurance you have? That's so nice.
Yeah. So I actually work for Starbucks. And underneath their health insurance, they 100% cover it. You just have to have their health insurance with their company.
Cool.
And then, specifically, I have Kaiser Permanente. So I've been going through their Gender Pathways clinic, and they have been nothing but amazing.
Oh, cool. I love Gender Pathways. Yeah.
Yeah, Dr. Deflinson has been amazing during all of this. Yeah, no, I saw her in person for the first time last November, and it was very much like, I would like top surgery eventually. And she was like, cool, we'll check up on that in 3 months. And about every 3 months, it's been like, so do you want it now? And I'm like, can't afford it, but I would like it. So keep me down as a yes, but not right now, please.
Wow. I love the Gender Pathways Clinic. They've been so great.
They've been so great, and it's been so easy to schedule appointments and talk to their health team about concerns and things like that. And I have been, again, very lucky to be able to both afford that insurance and be able to afford to go see them, especially right now during the craziness of the world.
Well, so Lee, when you were, it sounds like you were kind of early in your transition when COVID hit, you're partway into it.
Yeah.
Do you remember when it first came around? Like how were you responding to it at the time? I mean, did you think it wasn't going to be a big deal or?
I knew it was going to be a big deal, but I definitely played it off as, well, America's smart. We'll get this figured out in the next couple months. We'll bounce back. Like, I remember, like, St. Patrick's Day was coming up, and I went to the liquor store and bought, like, a 12-pack of Angry Orchards and was like, I mean, if I'm going to be quarantined for 2 weeks, I might as well be able to drink while I'm at home. And it's been 7 months, and I'm like, yeah, that alcohol went out a while ago. Yes. No, I should have grabbed a drink. Oh, well.
There are some advantages to doing this over Zoom.
Yeah, there are.
Yeah, I'm over here with my water, like, just like, yes, hydration.
So,
yeah.
Yeah, go ahead. So you were thinking maybe 2 weeks.
2 weeks, like a month or two, and then like April passed, and then it was May, and it was my birthday, and I was like, okay, so summer's kind of wrecked, but maybe by September we'll be fine. And now it's October, and I'm like, maybe by the end of 2021 we'll be fine.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Were you working during your turn when the COVID started? Were you working?
I was working. Starbucks was really great, and they paid for they basically did this thing where partners, which is basically what they call their like employees, they could either stay at home for 6 weeks and get paid their full wages while they were gone and keep their benefits and all that, or if you wanted to, you could continue to work with a $3 raise. So like if people wanted to work, they could and get like incentive for it, but people that didn't feel comfortable working didn't have to like make that decision. And then everybody came back in May, and they kept the COVID pay through May. I wish they had kept it for longer, but I don't work in corporate. yeah, so I took like the first real like 6 weeks of like pandemic quarantining off, and I've been back at work ever since.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
So you were one of the people who then was fortunate to be able to keep their job.
Yes.
Through the pandemic and not lose your job or your benefits. So that's great.
Yes. My partner and I are both very lucky. They work at Walgreens, and they were very lucky because, you know, Walgreens, they're busy all the time, especially with their pharmacy stuff. So they were also very lucky to not lose their job or any hours, really. They've been pretty consistent the whole pandemic.
Yeah.
Even though you're not financially like totally ready right now to, you know, make the investment for, I think you said top surgery was your, yeah, you know, next priority. The waiting lines can be really long for some of these surgeries. And so have you started, you know, exploring with Kaiser, you know, like how long the wait list is, who they're referring to, those kinds of things?
You know, I haven't, but because like in my brain, I was like, I want to be able to be ready because if Kaiser was like, we'll see you in 2 months, I'm like, that's not enough time to get money ready. But that was me being a little optimistic in that regard. I know wait times are forever. That being said, because my 1 year like T anniversary is coming up, I have like a video appointment with Dr. Deflison coming up in the next month or so. And during that appointment, I'm going to go, okay, it's time. Let's figure out what we got to do. And I need to call Starbucks because I know that like the way that like getting trans coverage is a little weird. It's possible. It's just like you have to go through like a certain thing in order to get it done. I can't just go schedule it and be like, hey, Starbucks, here you go. At least I don't think I can. I need to double check. So I was going to call my benefits person tomorrow and be like, hey, we good? Please. And start the scheduling and getting like my WPATH letter from my therapist and all that fun jazz in November.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we are in the works.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
So another big change that came around because of the coronavirus that's really affected transgender people specifically has been how people actually go and receive their medical care. And you've already kind of opened up that space that I was going to get to eventually when you mentioned that you you're doing video visits in order to, you know, kind of do your transgender care now. Is that a shift for you in how you received care from before? And how do you feel about that? Do you feel like video visits are able to adequately meet your needs for where you're at right now with your transition?
Yeah, actually, Dr. Devinson and I have, for the most part, been doing phone conversations. But after a year, because testosterone is such a controlled substance, she either has to see me in person, which we can't do right now, or see video of me to basically be like, I'm super good. Everything's great. So I so far have been fine with the phone appointments. I wish I could go in person and be like, hey, face-to-face time with my doctor, let's go. But I also like understand that that's super not doable right now, especially with a medical professional. So for me personally, it hasn't been too terrible. Like I deal with anxiety, but I'm also like, well, this is about my health. So like my brain just shuts off the social anxiety of like, oh, I'm on the phone with a medical professional. I'm not adult enough for this, even though I am 25 years old. That's such an adult. phone and video haven't necessarily been terrible. It's not my preferred method, obviously, but it hasn't been bad for me, so to speak. Yeah.
How do they deal with issues like being able to check your vitals and, oh, I don't know. I'm not sure what else they do in person. Sometimes they're doing like physical on-body checks for different things.
You know, I still have to go get my blood tested every 3 months to check my testosterone levels and like my blood pressure. Because for like people who take testosterone, it like thickens your blood to be equivalent of that of like a cisgender man. So it's basically double checking that like we're not like my blood pressure's great, because cis men are more prone to blood pressure and like blood pressure issues and heart attacks and things like that. So about once every 3 months, I have to go in and get my labs done, which has been fine because I'm also on a birth control called Depo-Provera, where once every 3 months, I have to go get a birth control shot. So I have been very lucky to be able to schedule those simultaneously. So once every 3 months, I go in, I get my labs done, I get my birth control shot, and I'm out in like 20 minutes.
That's cool. Cool.
Yeah.
It sounds like you've had a really easy...
I know. I told you this wasn't going to be very exciting.
This is great. It's just, you know, part of the reason that we have this show is it's not really about what the topic is. It's really about affirming the story. And so like any excuse that we can create in our minds for getting trans folks on the air is really what this show's about. It's about, you know, really supporting and uplifting the voices of transgender and non-binary folks. And your story is really important. I mean, it's people don't hear that many transgender stories. And so every story is really important.
Well, and also given the general, you know, mood of things right now, it's really, really nice to hear that, you know, someone at your stage of transition is kind of having like a seamless experience. That really speaks really, really well, both of, you know, your providers, your insurance, the company that you work for, and Portland and Oregon in general, in terms of, you know, how trans care is provided here locally. It's exceptional. It really is. And it's continuing to be, because I know we had good reason to be very afraid. Oh, I don't know, about a year ago, you know, with some of the efforts that the Trump administration has been doing. Trying to strip us of some of the advances that we've had, you know, over the last, you know, few years.
Yeah, no, that's been really scary. I know at some point during this quarantine, I don't remember the exact date, it was like, oh yeah, trans people aren't covered under like this protective law that makes sure that everyone gets coverage. And maybe it was just like 2020's been such a train wreck, but I read that and I was like, yeah, that sounds about right. And I just put my phone down and I was like, I can't. Okay, sure. Yeah. That's where we're heading. And I'm very glad that, I think it was like a Supreme Court judge or someone that was like, yeah, no, that's not true. He can't say that. No. So that's been very lovely to hear. But locally speaking wise, yeah, I'm very grateful to live in a more progressive liberal state that is just like, yeah, no, you get these things. And I'm very lucky to be doing it with a company that's like, yeah, of course you get those things. And with a medic and like a insurance provider that's like, yeah, of course, come see us and we'll get you that thing. Like I went to see Dr. Deflinson and a week later I was getting, like for my first time with Dr. Deflinson, and a week later I was getting my testosterone. It was just that quick and easy. And you hear about like some people being like, yeah, I had to wait 2 years before I could even start taking testosterone. And I got it in 1 week, and I'm very lucky and privileged for that.
That's very
grateful.
Illustrative. Yes, that's very illustrative of you know, the changes that I'm talking about, because I have a few years on you. I'm a little older than you.
Just a little bit.
Maybe one or two.
We would have gone to high school together, but you'd have been a senior and I would have been a freshman. It would have been fine.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, no, that, I mean, those narratives aren't that old, really. I mean, it's not that long ago that that is exactly the way things used to go. And isn't it wonderful that our society, at least here locally, has made, you know, such a shift?
Lee, I wanted to ask you another question. You kind of brought this up in the last your last comments. So we did a show about COVID. We'd interviewed a transgender nurse about 5 months ago, and one of the questions that Nicolette asked was about binding, and Nicolette spent some time talking about a study that they had read about binding. And I'm wondering, that was another question I had for you, was just if the current situation with COVID has affected how you like decide whether or not to do binding or not because of respiratory issues.
It has a little bit. Obviously, I'm not going out and about right now. I don't necessarily bind at home because I'm in the comfort of my own home. And yeah. Like, again, my chest doesn't necessarily make me dysphoric. It's like the lack of a chest that makes me euphoric. So like for me, it doesn't bother me 95% of the time. Obviously there's days where it's a problem, but for the most part it isn't. So for me, like binding has really been, oh, I'm going to the grocery store, I'm going to wear a binder for like 2 hours and then I will come home and things like that. So it hasn't affected too much simply because I'm not going out and about too much other than like to and from work, which that's just impossible. Mm-hmm. I don't know if y'all have ever been in a Starbucks in the morning. It is insanity. I love my job very much, but oh my goodness.
Yeah. It's right. Insane on the other side of the counter too.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's great. Well, that's good to know. So, you know, you're talking about binding, and also earlier you talked about taking tea. And I was wondering if we could ask you some questions about being a specifically transmasculine, that we don't get to talk about that much on the show because our show tends to be more transfeminine.
Okay, yeah, go for it.
So one of the things I'm wondering is, like, if you're just a member of the general public, mm-hmm. what are some of the things that you can, like, if you're worried, you're not sure what to say to someone who's transmasculine, like if you just meet them the first time, like, how do transmasculine people want to be addressed? What are okay things to say, and what are things that, like, it's not okay to talk about when you're talking with someone who's transmasculine?
So there's obviously like the generic stuff, like don't ask about like surgeries, don't ask them what their name was beforehand. I am being flashed back to my grandmother's wedding that I attended last September, and I was explaining to like some friends of my grandmother, because my grandma has been pretty good about my pronouns but still messes them up occasionally. It's fine, she's my grandma, she's gotten better, and I'm okay with that. But they were like, so sometimes your grandma calls you he and sometimes she calls you she, what's up with that? And I'm like, so this is the thing. And this person across the table who was very drunk, open bar wedding, it was great, which is like, so are you going to get surgery? And in my brain, that just translates to top surgery. So I went, yes. And then she, not like a full-blown scream, but very loudly went, so you're going to have a penis? And I was just like, no. Thank you for asking, but no thank you.
Right.
I appreciate the offer, but I'm great. but like there's just like the general stuff of that. On top of it, just like there's like the stuff of just like you, there's like trans women who get like overly like, oh, you're so beautiful, oh my gosh, you're like so, like just like the over flattery. That is also a thing for like trans masculine people, like, oh, you're so handsome, like my, like you're such a king. Yeah. And like obviously those compliments are great, I am very strong, thank you for noticing, but it doesn't have to be like, you don't have to say it every 5 minutes, I am aware. Right.
Sort of overdoing, yeah. It then,
yeah, like the overdoing it, like if you find out that I'm trans, you don't need to overdo it. Just treat me like a person. Just use different pronouns. And maybe occasionally comment on how handsome I look. But it doesn't need to be an everyday thing. I look great. Thanks. in terms of, like, being, like, addressed, I don't know. Like, obviously, if, like, a trans man's like, yeah, call me, like, sir, that's fine. I personally don't like sir or ma'am because I'm like, there's such old gender terms that I'm just, I personally... as my person, I'm obviously not speaking for all trans masculine people here. That'd be insane.
Right.
Yeah, I'm not part of a trans community, but let me speak for all of them.
Right.
yeah, I personally don't like being called like sir or anything like that, but just like, just talk to me and treat me like you would like a generic, like cis man or like a more masculine presenting person. Like, you don't need to overdo it. You don't need to remind me every 2 seconds that I am a dude. I am very aware of that.
Yes.
And if you're doing it for yourself, I guess that's okay, but find different ways to do it.
Uh-huh.
Lee?
Yeah.
I think this question tiers to, links to what we've just been talking about. So you're about a year into, you know, HRT, and you're enjoying some of those benefits at this point. Are you noticing a shift in terms of privilege?
You know, I personally haven't noticed a huge shift. I think part of it is like my voice is a lot deeper than it was like a year ago. But in my brain, I still have to talk up here. And so a lot of people, if like at work, if I'm like not binding and I'm talking up here asking you what size you would like in the Frappuccino for the fifth time, some people are very much like, that's a lady. And I'm like, thanks. Sure. Have a good day. Here you go. So I personally haven't noticed like a whole bunch of privilege, but that doesn't mean that I'm not getting it unknowingly. I have definitely been like enjoying the perks of like my transition and the things that have come with that. I'm sure I have gotten privilege by some people out there seeing as me as like a white cis man, but I haven't particularly noticed those. Yeah.
Hi, this is Emma. I just want to take a quick break from this interview to remind everyone that you can donate today at kboo.fm/give. We aren't at the station to take your call, but you can support by giving online. Again, that's kboo.fm/give. Or you can also make a contribution to the station at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue. So while we're sort of in this general area, even though Nicolette is not here tonight, I always like to make sure to include Nicolette's perspective on our show. Nicolette identifies as non-binary.
Okay.
And I'm just wondering, so like for us, you know, I identify as a woman. I just identify as a woman. And you're kind of going toward transmasculine. So how do you work, how do you reconcile, maybe not reconcile is not the right word, where do you see transmasculine folks within the spectrum, including non-binary people? How do people who are transmasculine have conversations with people who are non-binary? And how do you have that conversation like with yourself too, when you're not really sure what you are, for instance? Like, if you don't know if you're non-binary, if you don't know if you're transmasculine, how do you know? And once you decide, for instance, if you sort of decide, I'm going to be called he and him, or I'm going to be called she and her, how do you have conversations with folks who are non-binary then, that are authentic?
So I started transitioning and I came out as like a transmasculine a couple years ago, but throughout like college, so I'd say from when I was like 19 to maybe about like 22, I was actually identifying as gender fluid as like a way to, like, for me personally, obviously if you identify as gender fluid, that's so valid. Like that's clearly a valid gender and it's not a stepping stone. But for me personally, it was in my transgender experience because like I wanted to try presenting more masculine and more like androgynous, but I wasn't willing to be truly authentic with myself and be like, no, that's just you. That's just who you are. And I was like worried about like my family not accepting me. Not that I come from like a transphobic family, but again, I'm the only trans person in my family. I don't know how that conversation will go. If I don't tell them, they'll never find out. And it pretty much came to a head, I would say probably like the 6 or 7 months before I came out, so roughly 3 years ago, I finally decided to cut my hair short. I had like long curly hair but that probably went to about like mid back that I pretty much had since like the third grade that my sister trimmed for it for me once every 3 months, and I never did anything outside of that. And I eventually realized that, oh, I'm just putting my hair up in a bun or a ponytail every day because I hate how my hair looks and I hate how it makes me look. But I don't know why that is. And then eventually it was like, hey, you just want short hair. That's what you want. So eventually I talked to my sister. I was like, we're going to shave the sides of my head and you're going to give me a little like bob on top. To the horror of my parents who were standing in the living room watching my head get shaved in the kitchen. And I'm just sitting there like, this is so euphoric and so uncomfortable because my parents are 3 feet away and they don't understand. So around that time I started like with my friends being like, hey, could you use like he, him pronouns for me? Hey, I've decided to change my name to Lee. If we could like start trying that out, things like that. And then I finally came out thanks to my sister's Thanksgiving of 2018. Years are hard. Time is crazy. Because I went to Thanksgiving and my sisters are very much like, oh, I love my sisters. Let's take like sister photos, da da da, which is great. But at that time, it just made me feel so gross and so uncomfortable that finally I got home and at like 11 o'clock at night with my partner listening on speakerphone, I called my sisters and I was like, I'm trans. And Thanksgiving sucked.
Oh, good for you.
And they were like, oh my gosh, we would have like totally not done that if we had known. And I was like, I'm not mad at you that you did that. I'm just telling you what happened.
Yeah. That's what it took.
Yeah, and then I slowly came out to the rest of my family, and then I came out to my parents 5 days before Christmas, and that was terrifying. Because I was like, I'm going to come out because the rest of my siblings know, and if I get uninvited from Christmas, it's good to know now. Nothing like that happened. 5 days later, I was at my parents' house, and it was fine. In terms
that's
of
speaking, so great.
I was very lucky. My mom took the longest to come around to it. My mom is adopted, and she has like 4 kids. So there's like my older brother, my younger brother, my youngest sister. But like she helped raise my dad's 3 previous kids. But in like my mom's eyes, like obviously those are also her children. But I was like her first daughter. I was like her like first upbringing. And she was very much like, you're going to wear bows and dresses. She was very excited to have this daughter that I just could not be for my mom.
No,
which was fine. I eventually had to come to the point of like, that's what my mom wants me to be, but that's not who I am, and those have to be 2 separate things. So my mom took the longest to come around to it, but like eventually she did come around, which was great. I'm very lucky to be in such a supportive family. In terms of talking to like non-binary individuals about it, my partner is actually non-binary, they're agender. And so conversations about gender have been interesting because I'm very much like, I feel this way about my gender, but like, I don't know. And my partner's like, I just don't feel any gender. And I'm like, that's so good on you. I'm so happy you have figured that out, but that doesn't help me process. Mm-hmm. How dare you? Like, wow, rude. Okay. Truly all sarcasm. So my partner has been like one of the first people that I've spoke to about my gender, even before we were dating and we were just friends. I was like, by the way, I think I want to use they, them pronouns, like at the time when I was, and they were just like, yeah, that sounds great. I will do like, obviously like the, I respect that. I see it. Call me out if I don't use your right pronouns. And I was like, excellent. Thank you.
Yeah.
And then like, finally at some point when we were dating, I was like, can you use he, him, but pronouns for me? And the first thing that said was like, yeah, you got it, cute boyfriend. And I was like, okay. Thank you for like, this.
You called me what I asked you to call me.
Like instantly, thank you for the gratification uh-huh. of that. But yeah, so like in terms of like talking to like non-binary individuals about gender, I mean, gender is its own like individual experience. And obviously finding common ground with other like trans individuals is great. But like, I don't experience gender in the same way that either of you experience gender, or the same way that my partner experiences gender, or the same way that cis people experience gender. And so like, it's one of those things of just like, I have no problem conversing about gender, but there's definitely like, I've met a couple non-binary people that are like, I don't really want to talk about it. And I'm like, understood. Have a good day. Let's talk about Yu-Gi-Oh or something silly.
Right.
Like really about like my gender and stuff, I've had more conversations with cis people about it than non-binary people, mm-hmm. which is to be expected because cis people suddenly have 1,000 questions, most of which are inappropriate, and you just gotta play that minefield. But you go to a non-binary person, like, yeah, my pronouns are he, him. And they're like, oh, cool, mine are they, them. And you're like, excellent. And then you move on with your day.
Right.
Go back to making frappuccinos or whatever.
Yeah.
I feel like I have completely avoided your question, and I am so sorry.
No, you haven't at all. Oh, my goodness. No, you totally answered it, like, way more than I could have possibly hoped for. Thank you.
Yeah.
Jane, do you have any questions?
Oh, my goodness. No, not.
That's cool.
I mean, I don't. Yes, I do. And I need to frame it first.
Okay.
Earlier I was talking about, you know, there's a age generational difference here between you and I.
And, a little bit.
Yeah. And, you know, the experience of those of us who grew up in the last century is so different. It's so different than those of you who are coming of age now in this century. So here's my question for you. Earlier you were speaking about not so much being able to really get plugged into community, unfortunately, because of the pandemic, at a time that when you probably would be, I mean, you would have been had it been not this set of circumstances. With that whole preamble, Lee, do you have any acquaintances? Do you have any friendships or even just acquaintances with trans masculine folks of an older generation at all? Or is your interaction really kind of within your own age bracket?
It's pretty much in my own age bracket. I used to go to like the, I think it was called like the East Portland, but like the Gresham side of the PFLAG meetings, because at the time that was the only like, and I think it might still be like the only LGBTQ group in the Gresham area that I could even find. And even that group is more designated towards, we are like parents or relatives of like now like gay and lesbian and queer people. And so like, it was a group that I felt welcome in, but wasn't like necessarily for me, you know? But in that group, there were a couple of like trans masculine older men that would like lead the conversation or come be like special speakers. And that was really great. But for the most part, my, like the other trans people that I know in my life and that I interact with for the most part are in my age bracket. of like 20s.
Okay.
I know some that are like through my sister, because my sister's been very much like I'll talk to my sister about things. And goes, oh yeah, like my friend goes through that, and I'm like, yes, I love that. My 16-year-old sister, now 17, her birthday was yesterday. Time flies. Is like experiencing and meeting and being aware of like trans people when I had the tiniest frame of it. Like you talk about like our gap in what transitions like, and I think about the gap that I have between like people just 10 years younger than me that are in high school right now. Like when I was growing up, like the only like real like trans character I can even think of was him from the Powerpuff Girls. And I'm gonna be real, I still don't know what pronouns him uses. I just haven't looked it up. I'm like, okay, sure, whatever. But like you have like Steven Universe and you have all these kids' cartoons that have like gay people in them and trans people in them and non-binary people and just casually using they them pronouns and showing like two women kissing on screen and having a happy ending at the end. Revolutionary. Like, this is more speaking about like my sexuality. I'm bisexual. And I remember like in being in the seventh grade and starting to like develop like feelings for like other girls my age. And being like, I can't like girls, I like boys. You can't like both? That's insanity. And by the time I got to high school and learned about like bisexuality, my biphobia in myself was already so ingrained that I didn't even begin to process my sexuality until after high school, when I met other bisexual people and other people in my community of college, and being like, hey, wait a second, I also feel that way. Hold on. We need to process everything right now. And it's just crazy to me because like my sister talks about like having friends who came out as trans when they were like 12 or 13, or have known they were gay since they were like 7 or 8. And it's just, it's insane to me the gap that we already have in a 10-year time span. And again, I don't know what our time span is. It's probably very short, Gene. Yeah, so the gap is just crazy, and I am very lucky to be transitioning in a time where it's becoming more accepted, but I am so grateful and excited for our trans and like other gay youth who get to grow up and transition in such a welcoming time that's just like, yeah, we will do the things to like make sure that your experience is like easier, and we're gonna do our best to be like accepting of you and all that. I'm just so grateful for our trans youth and the experiences that I get to go through, knowing that they will hopefully get to follow in those footsteps on a even bigger and easier to trek path.
Amen, dude.
Yeah.
Amen.
Like, I realize that the path that I walk is thanks to people like you who transitioned, and the path that you walk is thanks to people who transitioned before you. And so, like, me walking, sometimes I forget that, like, in, like, the trans community, like, female trans, like trans women elders are like the age of 32 because of like, you know, the bias towards trans women, which is garbage, and I'm so sorry. So it's one of those things of just like, eventually I'm going to be a trans elder and I'm gonna look at the transition of these dang youths and be like, they have it so easy. Back in my day, I had to wait a week for testosterone. Crazy. Like, wow, it's just insane to me that, like, one day, like, a young trans person is going to look up to me as, like, wow, that's transition goals. And meanwhile, I'm just, like, here, 25 years old with my tiny tumness facial hair, just like, yes, here I am.
Oh, I had to walk uphill 2 miles barefoot to get my hormones, yeah.
Meanwhile, I'm passing you on the bus, like, hey. Some like 17-year-old sits by us in like a sports car, like, okay, good luck driving that in the snow, silly. Yeah, no, it's insane. Yeah, I feel like I didn't answer your question, but I feel like I answered like 5 separate questions.
Once again, Lee, just as Emma said a little earlier in this conversation, you answered it and then some. It was multidimensional and very, it had depth, it had color, it had lived experience to it. Thank you.
Yeah.
That was a really good narrative. Thank you.
Of course.
where during this pandemic, where do you go to get comfort and affirmation and you know, just kind of to reinforce your transition as a, you know, as a trans masculine person? Where do you go to get that kind of support right now?
That support for me personally comes from like my partner, who's been amazing. My family has been an amazing support system. Like, obviously, they can only help so much. Like, I love my family. They're doing great. Again, the first trans person and like the second gay person in my entire family. Like, my grandmother, who recently got married, is like also bisexual. But it was one of those things that like I was 14 and like just laying in bed one day and I sat up and I was like, my grandma and Cindy are lesbians. Because again, I didn't know what bisexual was. And that was mind-boggling to me, a person who had known Cindy for like 7 years, and being like, that's just my grandma's roommate. I completely blanked on, oh, community, right, thank you. I'm so sorry.
I have a grandma with a roommate too, so I totally get it. I totally do.
Yeah. My grandma has a lovely like husband now, which good for her. Heck yeah, grandma, get married at, I don't know, 60 or 70. Good for her. But like community, my coworkers who like, again, I work with like an all like, for the most part, as far as I'm aware, an all straight crew. But like a lot of the people in my store are like bisexual or pansexual. We always have like a couple like lesbians and like gay men in there. But I am very grateful to be in a very accepting store that's very much just like, I'm very grateful that I don't, now at least, experience transphobia from my coworkers. I had a couple coworkers in the past who, back when I was using they, them pronouns, were like, well, I don't have to use they, them pronouns for you because I don't get it. And I was like, that's a problem. Okay. Thankfully, she's now living. Yeah. Yeah, she's now living her best life as a bank teller at a bank I do not remember. I'm not going to put that bank on blast. It's not their fault. Yeah. But yeah, I'm like, the second she was like, I'm leaving, I was like, I need you to thrive and live your best life so you never come back to Starbucks.
Right.
This is the blessing I put on you. It is more of a blessing for myself.
Yeah.
But yeah, but like, other than like a couple like transphobic coworkers and like obviously some transphobic people I've had to weed out of my Facebook. That's been that just happens. It's been fine. My community has been like my coworkers, my partner. I go to like or I used to go to like a weekly D&D night, which again is full of just like a whole bunch of other like cis white guys, but they have also been nothing but supportive of my transition, which is great because I was so scared to come out to them because I was like, I need y'all to be cool real quick, and they were like, yeah, that's fine. I was like, oh, thank God. Thank goodness.
That's awesome, because I can tell you from my own lived experience that, or at least, you know, my lived experience was that, you know, toxic masculinity exists. There's no question about it. And it can be pretty brutal.
Yeah.
Have you had any, you know, have you experienced anything like that? I mean, has anybody like, you know, been in your face and it's like, come on, dude. You
know? Yeah, man up, dude. Bro, I inject myself every week with testosterone that your body makes naturally. I'm saying I do a great job. If you can't produce your own, store-bought is fine. I thankfully haven't dealt with like a whole lot. I thankfully haven't dealt with a whole lot of that. Like the worst I got was like, I was working out at the gym, obviously pre-COVID, and I was like leaving the locker room, and I was using the men's locker room. I put my binder on before going to the gym because I was like, I'm not dealing with that situation in the men's locker room. And like, I like almost bumped into a guy on the way out, and like I dropped my wallet, and my wallet at the time was a very bright pink Steven Universe wallet, and I picked up and went, sorry, and he just kind of gave me this look like trying to process, and I very quickly left before he could say anything. And that's really been like the worst of it, was just a guy gave me a mean mug look, and I just went, okay, have a good workout, and I left. But like, I was already on my way out the door, so it's not like I just like met a transphobic person and then didn't work out. I was already leaving for the day. We'll be right back. in terms of like toxic masculinity, the most I've experienced has been low-key putting it on myself. Like, this is how you pass and this is how you get accepted and you can't do these things. That as I have been on testosterone, I have been being like, oh, actually I can like wear pink again. Thank you for asking. Like, I have this like pastel pink shirt from Target in my closet right now that's become like my favorite shirt to wear on the weekends. That like when I was pre-transition or even started, I wouldn't have even dreamed of buying, because I was like, I can't wear bright colors. Like, cis men can do it because they're cis and they're passing, and like other trans explorative people can wear that, because good on them, but not me personally. No, I cannot. That I have been exploring more and being like, yeah, no, I can wear pink. I can like paint my nails when I'm not working, because Starbucks doesn't allow painted nails for obvious reasons, and that's fine. But when I was out of work for six weeks, painted nails every day.
Oh, great.
And like I've started like filling in my eyebrows a little bit with like some eye makeup, of like not even things that I bothered to do pre-transition, because other than like cosplaying and dressing up and stuff like that, I don't mess with makeup. That's like not my thing, because again, I was like, I didn't like makeup because it was such a feminine thing, that now I'm like, oh yeah, that's why. And so like now I'm like willing to wear like a little bit of makeup when I go into work. I'm willing to like explore what my gender identity is, that at the beginning of my transition I wasn't giving myself the space to, because I was like, I have to pass and I have to be cis passing and I have to meet these toxic masculine standards that the world has set up. And now I'm like, no, I don't. Like, I do a little bit. I will one day own a pair of cargo shorts and bright white New Balances, because that's the dad energy I'm going for.
I'm talking with Lee Farmer from let me start that again. Hi, you're listening to KBOO Community Radio, and tonight we're having a conversation with Lee Farmer about transitioning during a pandemic. And Lee, we've got about 5 minutes left.
Okay.
Already run through almost an entire hour. Jean, do you have any final questions for Lee or comments?
Well, it would be a follow-on to what we were just speaking about. Lee, what I have experienced myself and what I observe in what you were just talking about is, you know, at a certain point in transition, many of us, and I'll speak for myself personally, reach this point where we realize that it's like, I don't have to shun this other aspect of my lived experience, okay? Yeah. I don't have to shun that. I don't have to distance myself from it anywhere near as much as I thought I did. And so I thought that it was fascinating that you talked about what I call an integration. It's an integration, phase that we go through, where it's like, no, it's okay. I mean, I can like wear my old work boots and guys' jeans if I'm working out in the yard. It's okay. And like I heard that kind of reflected in some of what you were commenting on. I don't know whether everybody experiences that if they're doing, a full-on transition socially or medically, but I just thought it was fascinating that you've hit that phase.
Part of it has come out of like tiredness of like, I am so tired of trying to meet cisgender needs that I'm just gonna do what I want.
Yeah, yeah.
But the other part of it was to like accepting myself and all the things I like I prefer using soap from Bath & Body Works over men's soap. So of course I'm going to go and buy like their vanilla bean soap when it goes on sale. I knit beanies and scarves, and I haven't stopped doing that since transitioning. I've been very fidgety this whole time because I'm like, I left my knitting needles in the living room like a fool. I personally at this point have reached a point in my transition where it's like, I don't have to perform the gender that I am. I am just the gender that I am. And that comes in all aspects of what gender means. Like, not saying that like 7 months ago I was like performing as a man. It's just like I've reached a point now where I am comfortable being a man in all aspects of that. And if this bright pink shirt is in the men's section of Target, guess what? I'm buying it. It's $8. It's cute and I love it.
I love it. Absolutely celebrating this right now in this moment. It's just, I think that earlier I spoke about generational experience differences. I just am so enthused by the folks in your age bracket and just how genuine y'all are. And it's like, it's been a real pleasure meeting you this evening.
It's been such a pleasure meeting you too. Like I said before, I don't have like my scope of like transition and stuff like that has been mainly with people my age bracket. I don't usually get the opportunity to talk to older trans people and be like, so what was your experience like? Because I've heard from the internet that it was not great. How was it walking uphill in the snow and all that jazz?
It was scary.
Yeah. I feel like transition is still scary. We're just providing nightlights along the way now. Like, yeah, the dark is scary, but we all have nightlights now. Whereas before, you had to walk in with your own flashlight and be like, I hope this works. I hope I have enough batteries to light my entire path.
We now know that we are not alone.
Yeah, exactly.
This is a really kind of a weird phrase, but I used to feel terminally unique.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, and we're not alone. It's so wonderful.
Right. Well, this is a really nice note to end this interview on. We've been talking tonight with Lee about his pandemic transition story, which has been really great. It's been so wonderful talking with you tonight, Lee. And we're also joined by Jean, co-host. You're listening to Transpositive here on 90.7 KBOO Community Radio. Any last words, Jean or Lee?
Please, if you are in the area, you should have gotten your ballot in the mail. You can check where your ballot is. Early voting has begun. You have till November 3rd. Please vote.
Yeah, because they're coming for us.
your vote is so important, and you can do it at home in pajamas. Like, why? Go buy a stamp. They're like $3.
Lee, thank you so much. It's really been a pleasure talking to you.
It's been a pleasure being on. Thank you both.
I look forward to meeting you in person sometime, Lee.
I hope so too. Hopefully I can come down to the station and be like, hello, round two. No drinks this time, but that's fine.
Hey, there's room in the collective.
Okay. Yeah.
Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community